You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
Hi, and welcome to The Compass, the podcast documenting the struggles of life as an artist. I'm Leah Walsh. My guest today is Chris Perfetti. Chris is an incredible actor, and this conversation just delighted me. He acted a few years ago with my husband Frankie on the HBO show Looking, and after that we discovered that we have mutual friends and are practically neighbors in Queens, so I'm so glad that he's in our lives. I really enjoy his sense of humor, honesty, his heart so much. It all comes through in his work as an actor, and I'm grateful that he shared his thoughts and experiences with me very candidly for the podcast. On a side note, if you have a moment, please go to iTunes and rate the podcast or leave a review. It would really help others to find us in the future. Also, I am planning a live episode of The Compass on Sunday, November 6th. More information very soon, but put it on the calendar if you're in New York City and you want something to do right before the election to think about other things. I would love to see you there. I hope you enjoy the 48th episode of The Compass.
Pleasure is all mine.
So what do you do to try to keep from going to the dark side? That's the question at hand.
And what a question it is. If I'm being honest, I don't know. I don't know that I've come up with the right defense against the dark arts. or whatever I'm doing, I'm not succeeding at, because I'm in it right now, you know, it's like, and it's powerful. And because I create it, it's creative, you know, it's wily, my dark side. So right now it feels a lot like the thoughts go something like, the newest one, which I love, is I think of myself as like on this, treadmill with a million other people, and I'm sort of like falling behind, and I'm thinking like, well, people are, you know, I'm way back here and how will I catch up? And I'm thinking, you know, now I'm getting really stressed about money, because it seems like I'll just speak for myself. And as I get older, that becomes harder and harder to, ignore.
Yeah.
So I think depending on how dark it is, things range from, just numbing myself. That was last week, which looks like a lot of video games and a lot of beers. But the week before was kind of incredible in that I was in a class and I was seeing a lot of theater. The Actor Center is a thing, which I highly recommend. Just a company of actors who are interested in, you know, keeping their shit going. And I feel very fortunate to be a part of that. I'm currently working on a cross-gender streetcar named Desire Scene.
Ooh.
Yeah. So, it is. So that is a thing, you know, getting any day really where I'm getting to act. I feel like I buy myself 2 days of not acting. So
you can
yourself in that space.
Yeah.
Even if you're not getting paid for it.
Yeah, for sure. And yeah, sometimes it looks like going to the gym a lot, and sometimes it looks like I'm really wild about this gal Marianne Williamson, which is like very 90s Pollyanna. No, she's like a spiritual teacher, lecturer, author. And she is so rad. And her and other ways that I have been able to like tap into something bigger than me, seems to fool my ego enough to not really go down the rabbit hole. But
you have to keep reminding yourself.
Yeah.
That micro view.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's because it's particularly shit that, you know, it's so personal, and I'm sure you know people have said this to you, or you think this as well. It's like what we do. Who else? You know, my mother works. I don't know what my mother does, but she sits at a computer all day, Leah, and it's like nobody. She would never think to leave her job and say to herself like, "You are horrible at this. You've finally done it. You have pissed off that person for the last time. And like, how dare you step foot in here?" And because, you know, the line between what we're doing is between professional and personal is sometimes non-existent. It's like I carry it all day long and for years without end. And nobody else has to freaking do that. That's insane.
Yeah. I feel like it's you deal with it completely when you are working and when you aren't, in different ways.
Oh, yeah. It's like, this is what I mean about her being wily, you know. It's like, you know, you could be...
I'm going to steal that lid from you, because I think...
Oh, my God, please. That's some subtle manifestation of my dark side. It's my nerves. It's like, yeah. Yeah, I don't know that I have anything more articulate to say than what you just said. It's like, it doesn't matter. But if I can actually find a way to say this, it makes total sense, because they're the same thoughts that made, you know, drive me to the dark side don't make sense when I'm working and don't make sense when I'm not working. And so
do you find as time passes that you've gotten better at like recognizing the cycle, like identifying it as like, oh, I'm having these thoughts that I know aren't healthy and I know aren't real to a certain extent.
Yeah.
And you can kind of like pull yourself out of them momentarily before the next cycle begins.
Before the B shift.
This is reality. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, I think totally, yes. I have been, sometimes it takes a month or 6 months to battle one of them. But again, I think the really funny thing is that it comes from me, and so it's creative. And if I no longer believe something that I'm telling myself, I will come up with something else. Yeah. And I used to feel an impending sense of doom around this, but now it's when I can remember that this is actually a strength of mine. Yeah. You know, my creativity can be used for good or bad, you know, then I'm sort of like, then that's the same thing of like tapping into something bigger than you. It's kind of like zooming out, and that feels really good.
Yeah, I love that idea of thinking of it as a strength, or realizing that it is part of your creativity.
Totally. I mean, look at what we freaking do. We can talk ourselves into anything.
Into a different reality.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's to, you know, play Blanche, and sometimes It's to, I don't know, chain smoke on my roof for a week.
I just thought of this, but do you feel like when you were in training, did you feel like the school you went to addressed this part of the business at all? Like the fact that you were going to...
Why, do you think we have a case against them now? Do you think we can bring them up on charges?
I'm just trying to think of like the small ways that when I was in grad school, the very small ways that they mentioned that, oh, you might have to deal with this at one point or not, or you should...
Yeah.
Or did you feel like they just were like, you're going to audition and get a job and that's it?
Yeah.
Just curious.
The minute you asked that, I thought of, our second and third year speech teacher is this brilliant gal called, Lee Dillon.
And you went to
SUNY. I went to Purchase, yep. And she is no longer there, I don't think, but she used to say this thing. She said it early on because I feel like I've known it for years, but she would say, guys, this is a motherfucker of a business, with that perfect cup vowel. She's like, this is a motherfucker of a business. And, you know, me and my comrades took it to, you know, we saw that joke as far as it could go. But that's really it. I mean, there is no, I don't know if they did warn us. And even if they had, it's like, I don't know if you found, there are so many things that I heard 25 times at drama school that didn't make sense until I was out.
Yeah.
And to be totally frank, they do a different thing than us. It's like, even if they hear stories about, you know, what it means to try and act every day. It's just different. It's
I think they're in that education role.
Yeah.
The training.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I remember our acting teacher Richard. I'm sure this has been mentioned actually on the podcast before, but he would tell this story about that actress Cameron Manheim.
Yeah.
It took a long time for her career to take off, and that she would set herself, like, that every day at 9 a.m. she would go to the coffee shop with a newspaper or something else to do, just so that she, like...
Had structure.
Yeah, something to get her out of her house every day and to feel active, you know?
Yeah.
And I think about that a lot now as I find those different things for myself.
Yeah.
When I do structure. Do you have... Do you long for structure in your life, or are you not one of those
I
people?
Do. I am like, and my conservatory buddies make fun of me to this day. I'm like the only person that really misses school. I don't miss necessarily like exposing myself in that way, or like but I miss the structure so much. And I miss, you know, when we're in school, this kind of has something to do with your last question. It's like, We learn about acting, and it becomes the biggest thing in the world. It's like, you can do anything. It's like kids playing Uncle Vanya. It's like, you know, ridiculous. And it's like, you know, where is that in me? And like, it just feels so massive and so majestic, and it is. But then nothing can prepare you for people telling you that it's not. And what it actually should mean to you, or what your function in it will be. I mean, about, you know, it's funny, you thinking about going to a coffee place and reading a newspaper every day. It's like, I don't do that, but I do try and start the day, in a certain way. And sometimes that looks like meditation, and that tends to be a better day if it's that. Sometimes I go to the gym just to
get moving.
Yeah, and if I do it early on in the day, it's like, I feel like if I don't go to the gym, I've spent that entire day saying, could I? I should. You can do it. No, I don't feel like it. It's like,
if
so,
I go first thing.
Yeah, I won't.
Either first thing or last thing.
Yeah.
I'm not going.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. It's very hard to have structure in our lives, you know?
Because you're supposed to stay so flexible.
Yeah.
At the drop of the hat, ready to run out. Yeah. An audition or whatever.
Yeah.
Oh, I was going to ask, because you've done, you worked off-Broadway quite a few times. Are you involved at all with this Fair Wage on Stage movement,
like Equity Stage? I am. I just made a video for it yesterday.
I've been watching these videos on Facebook.
Yeah, it's super inspiring, right? Yeah, I mean, it's, I mean, speaking of, you know, learning in school how big, you know, and how glorious what we could do is, and then, you know, thinking in school, like, I would kill to, you know, audition for the public theater. And I did too, and then finding out that you can't live off of a job, you know, I did two plays last fall, winter, and I made more, and I've made more money in a week of television from those two plays, the run of those two plays, and that's super scary. And everything that should be said about this is being said, which is amazing. And
yeah, it's 2016.
Yeah.
Yeah, and well, what you were saying in the beginning about worrying more about money as you get older is like, yeah, of course, right now, like in our 20s and 30s, it seems doable to, you know, wait for those two gigs a year or whatever, or be excited that it is an off-Broadway theater. But when you think down the line to people who are our parents' age, like, I don't know how those actors are doing it.
Yeah.
Or we worry about retirement and that kind of thing. So I'm glad that this movement is going on. I don't know that much about the workings of how it's actually working or if there is an end point in store, or what the negotiation is, but
I cannot speak too thoroughly on how they're doing it or exactly what it will look like, but it sounds like doubling the off-Broadway minimum over the next few years. Yeah, it's like super tricky though, you know? I mean, I went to a school that was trying to exist in a state school system, and so I had a really stellar group of teachers, but the resources were not always there, and I feel like I was sort of taught to be a scrappy dog, which I am very grateful for.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, in terms of this, that it's you know, I would do off-Broadway plays for the rest of my life, and I would eat brown rice and sardines and just do it because it's that satisfying. But, well, I say that now, but, you know, I don't know.
Right.
I guess that's why it's changing, because we've said that for so long.
Right. What has it been like for you to kind of dip your toes into the TV world and switch back and forth between theater and TV, like, as an artistic side and the financial side? Or, like, what's your experience?
I'm curious. Cripplingly... anxious. No.
It is a different way of working as far as like the amount of rehearsal.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, working with your amazing husband was one of the most rewarding and frightening, experiences of my life. You know, in theater, we spend a month figuring out what every moment is, sort of. And then the work becomes about, you know, how do I make that real for myself and how do I forget it all so that it's, so that it's just living in a subconscious place. And film and TV honestly scares the living lights out of me. And particularly this show, Looking, which is so damn good, but doing it was really, I found, challenging, because not only are we not going to spend a month figuring out what each moment could be, we are not going to spend 30 seconds and you're not going to know, you know, the beauty of that show and a lot of my favorite things are like, you just take these wickedly talented people and you give them the permission to, right, to be this person.
So in a way, there's so much trust in you.
Yeah.
But I'm sure it feels a little nerve-wracking.
Oh my God. Well, because it's like, I mean, they are by no means playing themselves on that show, but showing up and having less and less, I guess, to hide behind was really hard for me. But again, it's my favorite thing. It's my favorite things to watch. It's what it's all about. But it's so different. It's yeah. I mean, theater is like where my heart's at. You know, it's, I don't find anything more jolting, more life affirming.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure with TV, like if you were the director of a TV show,
yeah,
you probably, or the maybe the writer, but you probably feel more of the ownership over it, since it's that kind of director's medium where they tell the final story with the editing.
For sure.
Even though there's so many people involved, but with theater, it really is on the actor's shoulders once it opens.
Yeah. And it just feels like acting. You know, it's like we're going on this fucking train ride and it's going to start and end. And it's going to end 2 hours later. Sometimes it's most of the time it's chronological. Yeah. Right. In theater, in film and TV, it never friggin' is. And for a while I was like really brooding artist, you know, throwing my hair back behind my ears, like, you know, that's tricks. That's like my favorite film actors have just figured out how to, you know, how to technically work something. And I have since been disabused of this notion, but give me a 3 hour long, you know, Tennessee Williams play any day, which I'm sure a lot of people would agree with.
Yeah.
It feels groovy. And the totally depressing thing is you can't make a living off of it. It's like, it's just no way, no how. It's again, I just don't think anything could have prepared me for, I mean, everybody sort of, you know, you hear it before you jump into the pool. Everybody's like, you know, it's a hard life. But yeah, I mean, I'm remembering now, I've had these moments in my life where I sort of am, I'm having like a come to Jesus, and there's usually a cigarette in my hand, and I'm like sitting somewhere and I'm just thinking to myself, like, I can't believe it's this. Like, I, when I was 13, I never would have guessed that, like, I would feel this, that it would be this hard, or that it would be this amazing. And
sometimes at the same time.
Yeah. Holy cats. I mean, those are, yeah. Yeah. And it's amazing to think about, usually when I'm doing that, when something has happened or I'm just, you know, I'm also thinking about like just how different, I guess the same thing, how different my life would have been if I, you know, didn't go to the school that I went to, or if I grew up, you know, 20 minutes away from where I grew up, or if I didn't meet, you know, this person.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, I worked on a TV show once that I made a lot of money off of, and I asked for the audition. I found it, I read about it, and I just sort of randomly like hunted it down, and my agents were like, no, it's, you're just, you know, no, you're not right for it. And then, you know, something changed, and I don't know if they sent me in, but like a week later I had an audition for it, and it's like, what the hell, you know? Yeah, what would have happened? It's just gnarly.
Yeah. Well, there are two things I want to ask simultaneously, but I'll do one at a time. Going off of that, I guess, is I think one of the biggest themes of this podcast is, like, it's going to take me a long time to articulate it because it's hard, but what is success? How do you define success for yourself in a way that's healthy and, like, celebrate the wins you have but not have those highs be the only thing that's sustaining you, because otherwise yeah. you're living 80% of your life on, you know, feeling yeah. like a failure. So, like, how do you balance, yes, I want to celebrate the wins in my life.
This is making me so anxious, this question, Leah, because it's like saying... It's like pulling the curtain back and saying, like...
This is something that I deal with, so I'm, yeah. I'm asking you. It's like,
yeah.
how can you, in one half of your brain, aim to be like, well, part of me would love to be, quote-unquote, successful and making millions of dollars doing what I love and great, but the other half is saying, like, well, that's... I'm a success now, and I yeah. can't define it as that, or only 1% of us is ever going to get it.
Yeah.
So, I don't
know. So, solve the universe.
Thoughts on that. What do you how do you define it for yourself so that you can live a somewhat healthy life?
Well, hearing you say it makes me want to believe, and on a groovy day, I do believe this, that it's both. And I think it's more one than the other. I mean, I think to define myself as an actor trying to exist in show business will only reap very shallow rewards. And the days that I remember that my life is, and just the miracle that I am even here is what it's all about. But there are things that make the miracle a little easier, or let me forget about the hard shit. And so, I don't know. I define success as being happy, and being happy is not, I know in the back of my mind, has nothing to do with money or acting, you know?
Yeah.
Not nothing to do with, but you know, I don't need them to, I think.
Yeah. Speaking of that, like, I'm not articulating things well today. Maybe it's because
I think you are.
I mean, one of the things that's most important to me as far as making sure I'm happy outside of acting is, like, my community and my family. And, like, has your family been supportive of you as an artist? Do they attempt to understand it? Like, what kind of friends have you drawn around you that can make you feel like, oh, I have stability in that?
Oh, Leah. Yes, yes. I, like, lucked out, man. I mean, I hope that someday I can pay, you know, them back for driving me to things as a little kid and saying, I'm going to acting school. Like, can I ever, I mean, I'm paying for my acting school, but can I ever, all the yes that they had to say, that they did say. I mean, there are always, and I think it comes from a loving place. You know, I loathe having to, I try to talk to my parents every weekend, and sometimes there are just stretches where like there's an unspoken, like, how's it all going? And, you know, I used to tell my mother about auditions and, you know, that was the worst thing. One I could have ever done.
We've learned that lesson.
Yeah. My grandma, who is like the greatest person to ever walk the earth, for like a blip, for just a hot second, was like, okay, like, but is there something else, you know, you can do? And I was like, no, I think this is it. I think this is, you know, way more than I need. And that was it. That was really the only sort of resistance I've ever gotten from anybody. But again, it's like, it's just Mama Bear saying like, I do not want your inevitable destruction.
That's wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah, I have an older sister. Yeah, she's much smarter than me. She makes money and has lasting relationships. No, I have lasting relationships. She's
Is she in Rochester?
Yeah, yeah. She's up there holding it down.
So they're not too far away.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Yeah, I'm super lucky.
Do they come down and see your stuff?
They do. If I invite them, sometimes I'm... yes, they do. I'm really they are my family, but I consider my family those folks I went to drama school with. I mean, that just like, I mean, talk about something that sustains the dark side, you know, when the dark side rises, it's like, I had no idea that Rochester was an incredible place to grow up, but, you know, I spent many, many years in Rochester trying to find, you know, trying to latch on to some, you know, group, some identity, and I latched on to all of them, really. I mean, but when I went to Purchase and I just met these people who were like, you could just do anything. Like, you could be literally anyone. Like, you can love anyone, and you can look like anything, and you can want anything, and who cares? Purchase is extraordinary in that it's, like, it has these incredible, these world-class conservatories that sort of exist in a burnt-out, like, hippie commune. And so everybody else who... And even some of the people who are studying art there are just like, you know, I feel like I went to Woodstock for 4 years. It was incredible. And so those dudes became my family, and we all moved to New York. Most of us are still here.
How are you feeling about the city right now? Do you feel like you're here long term?
No, I do. It scares me, the answer. I really like New York. I don't know if I would live here if I didn't get high off of making art with other cool people. So I don't. I have my fantasy, Leah, mm-hmm. is like, I'm on a commune that I have not thought of a really fun name for yet. A compound. And I wake up from my room, and I'm upstate somewhere on acres and acres. And I walk down, and I grab my coffee, and I go into the living room where a chef and whoever runs the museum and whoever runs the theater and whoever runs the farm is there waiting for me. And I say, and somebody hands me a manila folder, and I say, what are we doing today, guys?
Well, Frankie and I will be there.
Oh my God, will you ever? I hope you'll stay for a long time.
Let's do that.
Okay. I mean, what could be, I can't think of something better than that. I can't think of something. And what is so cool is there are versions of it sort of already, and I am really dumb and idealistic, and so I have a crazy version concocted in my mind, but I think if I think of it long enough, I could make it happen. So, yeah, I mean, I gotta get out, man. The cool thing about New York, though, is when you do, I'm so excited to get back. I'm like,
yeah.
There is, for 5-6 years now, there is a palpable, like, I get butterflies every time I turn that corner and I see, or I go underground to, you know, because the train can't get any closer to New York without going underground, or, you know,
yeah, it makes you remember how you felt the first time.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's better the more you get away from it, I feel like.
Yeah, it just puts it in check. And so I need something to put it in check. Because even if I'm not self-absorbed and, you know, and totally down thinking about what we're trying to do, trying to think of, like, the politics and the shit business that we try and survive in, New York itself is just, it seems like we don't have the evolutionary, we don't have the biology to exist in a New York City yet. And so, or I don't. So I feel like even if I weren't an actor, I don't have the chops. Yeah. But I really like it. It continually blows me away. I mean, this thing that we did the other night was like, I was smiling from ear to ear. I was like, this is such a New York moment. And I'm so fulfilled.
So you guys know.
Hello.
Brendan Spieth, who has an amazing episode of the podcast. It was within the first 10 episodes.
Busy.
Go listen to it. But he was in charge of, like, creating these immersive experiences in this huge 70s disco dance party, and Chris came and hung out with us, and it was a blast.
Oh my god.
I'll have to have him back on to talk about it. Are you a writer? Like, what kind of things do you do on the side to, like, do you ever make your own work? Do you ever collaborate with friends just for fun and, like, in these dry times? Or
yeah.
That's my question.
Yeah. I dream of writing. I try to write with varying success. I have a writer friend who said to me a couple years ago, like, he actually genuinely believes that everybody is a writer, and you know, and that he's just dumb enough to show up every day and just do it. And he's worn away the whatever it is that says, you know, do something else, or you're not good enough, or this isn't any good, or and obviously there to that, I'm, you know, my ego goes, well, there's, you know, there's talent, there's technical things I need to learn to be a writer, but I'm trying to show up more and more every day. And I sort of have the same relationship to it as the gym. It's like, if I just pencil it in, I'll do it. And if I hold myself to it, you know, somebody told me once that, like, if you make a gym date and you put on your gym clothes and you go and you still don't want to friggin' be there, then leave. But that's never happened to me. And,
right.
And
that's the hard part.
Yeah. And so I'm trying to, you know, I've just reordered my desk. I've tried to make my desk a place. My wife, Sophie, has, like, made me hip to this, I can't even remember. I'm so disorganized, I can't remember the name of the book, but there's a book about tidying up your life, and it actually makes sense. I mean, if you value your space that way, which I do more, I don't know if it's enough, but it gets me to write. I really like writing. I really like making YouTube videos with my friend Micah that I don't usually post, but we just get each other, and we can, and I really get off. Yeah. I really get off on making him laugh, and he makes me laugh. And so I do that. Yeah. Yeah, that's what I do.
I wasn't sure. I was stalking you online, and I saw you had some links to some friends' theater companies on your website.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure if you had been involved in those at all, or if they were just ones you admired.
A little bit of both. It's mostly just my admiration. These guys that I went to purchase with have made a company called Strange Men, and I'm a huge fan of theirs, and I hope that they will read my play when it's done. They made this incredible show called The Woodsman that ran for quite a bit. Yeah. So it's both.
How have you been dealing with the financial side of things? Have you had to have a day job in a while, or what's your like little collage that you managed to survive?
I'm really good at ignoring it. You know, I think if I don't.
Acting a lot.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure if you'd just been stretching that out or if you had.
I have, man. I'm really keen on brown rice and sardines. I mean, it's all I need. It's tricky, you know. I want just enough money to not think about money, and I don't know that I've ever really had that, but whenever I get down on it, which I am right now, and I'm thinking about, like, what the next move is, and this is probably not entirely healthy, but there's something in me that catches when I think about money for too long, and it's currently sort of making me avoid having the discussion with myself, but it's just not what we're here to do. It's a fact of the world, but I don't let it have the power over me that it used to. I mean, even if shit really goes to shit, it's just, as long as I'm not hurting anybody else,
yeah.
You know, I try and think about it honestly as little as I can. And I've been fortunate.
In some ways, because I feel like Frankie and I are the opposite, where we worry about it even when everything's fine. Which
yeah.
Isn't healthy either.
Yeah. But, I mean, so hard not to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We'll see. I mean, it's why I live here. it's one of the reasons why I live here, you know, because your money goes far and because, yeah, and I feel like we escape. I like going in, you know, to dreadful Midtown and doing, you know, my work, and then we come back here and anonymous is not the right word, but I feel like I'm rejoining, you know, I feel like I'm living a double life. Like, I go to the butcher and I'm like, hey, Bobby. And he has no idea that I'm, you know, cheating on him with Ripley Greer fucking Studios. Yeah.
That is really nice.
Yeah.
Is there anything from the past?
I need to maybe inherit some of your guys' money consciousness.
We
and.
We need to be in the middle. Because either extreme, I feel like, isn't good.
Yeah.
Is there anything from the past years that you're really proud of that you would share with me? Like a lesson you learned or something that isn't like obvious but that you're really proud of?
Holy cats. I mean, there are five things lobbying for fighting to the front right now. Yeah, life is good. I think honestly, if you can call bullshit if this is too big of a thing to lump into to take the number one spot as most proud, but it's meeting new actors in New York. It's going to a play, which I try to do as much as I can, and it's having a beer afterward with maybe the person that I know, or maybe with the friend that I went to the play with. And I'm just continually blown away by the colors of the people who are in the same place and who are like, it's weird. It feels like a family that you have no idea how big it is, and And this is, you know, this does not take into account, you know, personality. It's not like I have met a lot of actors who are incredible people, but actors are such a extraordinary breed of people. So even the ones that I haven't, I'm like, I'm so excited to get a beer with them. And so I think the past couple of years has just like blown me away with rich humanity.
Yeah, and that you feel like you're a part of that community and really delving into it. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. There's nothing like, you know, running into somebody
or
who
that you meet somebody and you're like, obviously you're gonna have someone in common.
Right. Right.
Share some experience.
And it's often when I'm having those, it's the thing that I was trying to, and probably poorly, painting earlier, of these moments where I'm just like, where you zoom out a little bit and the world sort of slows down or speeds up or whatever it is. And it's like, holy shit, I didn't know it was this, that I could feel this, or holy shit, I didn't know life was this great. And I have those a lot when I'm at West Bank Cafe after I've seen something at Playwrights Horizons. So that's it.
We don't have to talk about this if you don't want to, but I'm just going to ask.
I want to.
Have you felt, like, as a gay man, have you felt any, like, challenges in auditions or casting or, like, walls being put up, or has it not really been an issue of people pigeonholing you at all?
Yeah, it's totally an issue. It's like, it's, I mean, what I was saying earlier about working on the show with Frankie, where everybody has just said, the job that I had right before I started looking was, this pirate, this show set in the 16th century. And I had just been captured by pirates and I was English. This is the one I found. And I was like, that's gotta be so much fun, the explosions and the, you know, I love hiding behind an accent. And so, you know, jumping into looking was like, not only are you not playing a British person being jailed by pirates, you are playing a gay man who looks, sounds just like you. And honestly, I had a lot in common with. And in addition to that, they said, okay, you know, this is the scene, but, you know,
let's do it.
Just go. And and it's why they are all so damn good on the show. And I am a frozen, you know,
no.
Popsicle. So
it felt really naked.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I would be a total dummy not to say that it's a real thing that I think about, that I worry about. And it's because, I mean, I'm not gonna pretend to be somebody else. I'm not gonna lie to anybody,
but if you get sent in for like the straight romantic lead.
Yeah.
Are you like worrying about what the people behind the table's thoughts are, secret thoughts?
Yeah.
Spoken, you know?
I am often sent in as the straight romantic lead. I can't even wait. I am, but honestly, I'm so debilitated with fear by other things that, like, if I've made it that far where they've said, yeah, send Chris in, then I probably would honestly feel less nervous about that because it's
right.
Because again, it's maybe further from my ebullient, lovable, flamboyant self.
I was just curious because I know it's like you were talking
about. Yeah, man, the struggle is real. The struggle is real.
Playing characters that are variations of being far away from ourselves and close to ourselves, it's still you doing it, so it's...
Yeah, and it's this... personal. It's, you know, thinking we can play Uncle Vanya again, and then somebody, a business person, says, you
right.
are whatever.
You're like, my imagination.
Right. And this is a real...
to be whoever I want.
Yeah. This is a real travesty. I mean, like, this is boring and stupid, but, like, there is a severe lack of imagination on our business friends' side. And that's super annoying. I mean, actors can do anything, you know, and I don't know. I have friends who, you know, I have seen just blow me away with their heart and versatility and technique. Who have to play maybe the same thing or something. Beneath them is the wrong.
Right, but just repetitive.
Yeah. Because
the business side can be like, oh, well, I've seen them do that, so that's a sure thing.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Womp womp.
Womp womp.
Holy cats. I'm going to buy a pack of cigarettes on the way home.
Oh. Have some kimchi.
Kimchi.
Have some fermented something.
She's in my fridge, yeah.
Things that you reach for again and again, like another piece of art, like a book or music or someplace you go.
Yeah. I'm big into nonfiction. I'm so I reach for Marianne Williamson, who I mentioned, because that just sort of feels bigger than me and, you know, shuts my ego up. I reach for a documentary. I reach for cooking, reaching is sometimes harder than, you know, but those are the things. Yeah.
And then the last question is, have you seen anything recently that you want to recommend?
I do. Sarah Delap wrote this play called The Wolves, that is being done by the Playwrights Realm. At the Duke on 42nd Street. That is so stellar.
Is it playing for a while? Do you know? Did they just
I think they've just opened last week, I hope it'll be around for a long time, but it's what we're all doing. It's what it's all about.
Anything else?
No! Oh my God!
I'm just
Holy All cats, right. What a privilege.
Yes.
There's this amazing glowing light just behind you, and you look very angelic.
That
and
on purpose,
it's.
Now it is.
I think it is.
Right.
It's fitting.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you, Leah.
Thank you for listening to the Compass Podcast. I'm Leah Walsh. More episodes are coming soon. Please look for us on Facebook and iTunes. I'd like to thank the following people for their generosity. The Compass cover art is by Kim Miller, music by Brendan Spieth, audio assistance from Nick Choksi, and a special thanks to Frankie J. Alvarez. See you next time.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Suf's has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suf'smusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard. So you were being crucified over here, but
yeah.
Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.